So the theme of this section here is queens have lost their husband in a battle, Suyugya, and they're lamenting over his death. The lamentation is so strong that it somehow or other brings about the attention of Yamaraj. He appears to show his mercy by giving in transcendental knowledge to these queens. And these verses are just explanations of what he's trying to communicate to them. Coming as a little boy, he thinks, or he understands, that the transmission of the knowledge will be more effective. By being a little boy, they'll be more apt to listen to a little boy or a little person speak wonderful and most enlightening transcendental knowledge. So in this particular verse, it gets right to the essence of life. The bodily concept of life is very strong. To come to realization that one is not this body is a process of purifying the heart through the process of proper engagement in spiritual practices. The association between the soul and the material body have been long termed. In 1974, in Germany, Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture at one university to, of course, university students. And he began his lecture by saying, you have been, before you have come to the human form of life, you have been through 8 million species of life. You cannot remember this, but this is the actual fact, that the human form of life is very rare, and it's awarded after so much transmigration of the soul from one body to another. So we can't even calculate what it's like to be in 8 million bodies other than human bodies. It's unimaginable. But it's a fact. So that association with the material energy is so long-termed that there is a term that describes the conditioned soul in the material world. It's called nityabada. Nitya means eternal, and bada means conditioned. So we understand that the soul, at one time in existence, was with Krishna and within the spiritual world. But somehow or other, due to some situation, the soul has fallen to the material world. So that is what we say our existence. But the word nityabada means eternally conditioned. And the word eternal means ever, forever. So why is that terminology used to apply to something that is eternal, but not eternal in the conditioned sense, but eternal in a different way? Well, the acharyas give the explanation, because wordings require explanation sometimes in order to clarify what is trying to be communicated. And wordings not only give definitions, but they also give what we say deeper meanings to what is actually trying to be communicated. It's not like when you hear something, you just get the dictionary definition of the words and then you understand what's being said. No. Actually, the words actually mean that because of the long-term association with material energy, the conditioned soul cannot possibly begin to calculate or trace out its beginning in material energy. It seems so long-term that the word eternal is the best word to apply to this situation. That's what it really means. That we have been in this material existence from body to body. Kardanam guna sanga so jana janmasu sadasa joni janmasu. Srimad Bhagavad Gita explains that the conditioned soul transmigrates from one body to another, life after life, sometimes in a good position and sometimes not so good. Sometimes in the higher planets as a demigod, sometimes on this planet as a human being, sometimes in lower planets or in lower species of life. So this transmigration has been going on, life after life after life. One cannot stop getting a body. It's not like some people think that, well, when I die, that's the end. Or if I destroy this body, then I'll be free from the bodily conception of life. But as long as one has material desires, one is guaranteed to get a body. Sometimes you also get a subtle body, such as a ghost. That's awarded to those who either die very suddenly from accidents or die by killing their present material body. Then they get a ghostly body. But still, it's a body. So there are so many species of life. But the soul, or the individual, is different. The translation explains that what is this body? It's a combination of elements that come together in a certain situation and formulate what is called body. Earth, water, fire is mentioned here, and ether and air. We know there are 10 airs within the body, 5 primary and 5 secondary airs. And the body is mostly, we're considered to be earth beings because we live on the earth planet and the majority of the body is made of earth. Of course, there is a lot of water in it also. But when you analyze it, that's all it is a combination of elements that formulate various types of, what we say, it's called the body or a functionary machine. It's a machine, that's all. The body is simply a machine. And then within the body, there is the subtle body, which is mind, intelligence, and false ego, which cannot be perceived by what we say gross senses, but we can only be understood by its actions. The mind is working, thinking, the intelligence is discriminating, and the false ego is identifying itself with the body in so many various ways. So this makes up our material existence. And it's so strong that this conception of life that it becomes almost impossible to get free from this understanding. Unless one actually develops real clear knowledge of the relationship and is fixed in devotional service, one can transcend the material body. Or one can transcend all the concepts that are connected with the illusion that says, well, I am this body. It goes very deep. So, here, this verse is explaining that just as a person identifies with their material possessions so strongly, Prabhupada would sometimes use a very simple example, that people have a car accident, and you say, well, you hit me. No, I didn't hit you, I hit your car. No, you hit me. It's like it's so strong that the object, which is so much an attachment for the owner, becomes the identity of the owner. So sometimes even people identify even their extensions of their body as themselves. It's so strong how this material concept is. So, but this is the ABCs of what we call getting out of the material world. The first principle Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita is this concept. He first teaches this before he teaches anything. Asocham anvasocham stva patyavaram shivasase gatasums agudatsums cha nanusochanti panditaha. Upandit, he called Arjuna upandit. You're speaking very nice words, but you're on the bodily concept of life. That's you're identifying the enemy as your relatives, kinsmen, friends, and so many, even enemies. You have this conception of what you relate to as related to you. And so Krishna told him, you have nice words, you have nice philosophies, and it's very nice sentiment, but You're a pundit. In other words, you're a fool. That's basically what he said. And then that starts the whole Gita off. And then Krishna from the next, that's the 11th verse in the second chapter. From the 12th verse to the 29th verse, Krishna is explaining the difference between the body and the soul. So how much time he gives to this point? It's amazing. It's practically almost 20 verses just talking about the difference between the body and the soul. Because it's preliminary. One cannot understand clearly higher knowledge unless one understands this principle very, very solidly, the difference between the body and the soul. Theoretically, we understand that. But theory is not, what we say, strong enough to get us through to higher realization. We have to come to the realization that we're not this body. How's that realization understood? Is that the body should be given what it needs only to carry on and not more. If one determines their success in life on how the present situation of the body, that is not correct. Or present, no, their success in devotional service. The body is very useful. As Prabhupada used to say, why is the body dear to a person? It's the most dearest thing. We have the story of the dachi. When the dachi when Indra had a problem with Vitrasura, how he can kill this big, powerful demon who was just destroying everything. Basically, the Lord said, go to the dachi. He can give you his body. And then from his body, you can make a powerful weapon called a thunderbolt weapon. His bones are so strong that it can be used for this weapon. So, and the dachi's a great sage. He's very magnanimous. He'll just naturally give you his body. So, I mean, this is a big request coming up to someone and say, well, we have this demon to kill, and we need a weapon, and it can only be formulated from your body, so please die. So that's basically what they said to him, in a very nice way. And the first thing he said was, the body is very dear to the living entity. You're asking me for something as most dear. And he was testing them, and he explained how dear the body is to the conditioned soul, or to the soul. And then he said, okay. And it was agreed, and then, of course, he gave up his body, being a great yogi, and his body was used to formulate the thunderbolt weapon, which eventually killed Vitrasura. So in that narration, he explains just how dear the body is to the conditioned soul. Why? Why is the body dear? Prabhupada says, because I'm in it. I'm in it. And it has great use. Especially a human form of body, because in the human form, that can be used for devotional service. Lower species of life, even demigods, are not the best bodies for devotional service, although they're a higher grade of material body. Why? Because there's too much enjoyment there. If there's too much suffering and there's too much enjoyment, these are disqualifications for success in devotional service. Both of them really impede a person's progress in devotional service. Too much suffering, one cannot really focus on devotional service because the needs of the body become too much. If there's too much disease, or there's poverty, or there's, you know, scarcity, these become a big concern, and one cannot practice Krishna consciousness clearly or effectively. But the other one, the illusion of the material success that one has by way of one's good karma, creates this idea that I'm in a good situation. And therefore, it's very hard to become humble, which is the first qualification of devotional life, to practice devotional service. So, both, and the illusion of material happiness keeps one, what we say, less enthusiastic to make a solution to the problems of life. Sometimes when you're put into a difficult situation and you have to call out for Krishna, that's the best situation. That's why Krishna does that. puts us in these situations where there's only one way to go, and that's to call out for Krishna to help us get free from the bodily conception of life and to understand our relationship with him as exclusive. So how do we deal with this situation? Therefore, one should use the body completely in the service of the Lord. Manaso deho geho yogichumur arpi lutu alpade nanda kishar. That everything belongs to the Lord. Even we say my body, but is it my body? Actually, it's not my body. It just happens to be where I live at this present point. But it's actually Krishna's body. The body is also belongs to Krishna because everything of the material energy is his energy, and the body is formulated from his energy. So actually, it's his body. So to use Krishna's body for Krishna's service is the best use of the body. And then the body becomes transcendental, actually becomes spiritualized. Just like Prabhupada was explaining to Dr. Patel on one morning walk, that Dr. Patel was an interesting person. Are you familiar with him? You've heard those lectures. He was probably the only person that could really argue with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada wouldn't mind. The devotees would get upset. But Prabhupada liked him in the sense that he was really a sincere person. But he would challenge Prabhupada really straightforward. I mean, really. Some people say that, of course this is speculation, but anyway, that he was related to Prabhupada in a previous life. So he would, Prabhupada was saying, well, the spiritual master's body is spiritual. And he said, yes, but not like Krishna's body. Prabhupada said, spiritual means spiritual. What's the question of different kinds of spirituality? Yeah, but he said, and that's not true, because Krishna's body is Krishna's body, but our body is not our body. So how could you say it's the same? Prabhupada says, spiritual means spiritual. And then he used the example, if you put an iron rod in the fire, and you leave it in the fire long enough, it becomes like fire. It loses its metallic qualities. So in the same way, when one is fully engaged in devotional service, and has purified them, their consciousness by devotion, their body actually becomes of the same spiritual nature. But it may look like it's material, but it's not this material anymore. Although it may have different, just like they say, well, when Lord Nityananda got hit in the head with a pot, his body exuded some blood. So does that make his body material? The impersonalists or those who have a poor fund of spiritual knowledge will say, it's obvious his body is material. But the Lord may exhibit these symptoms in order to keep the, what we say, the non-devotees in their material concept of life. But in the case of the spiritual master's body, that actually in some cases, we have actual examples where a body of a great soul doesn't deteriorate even after the time of death. There are many examples. In Christianity, that is a few examples. And also in Ramanujacharya, if you go to South India, in the Sri Rangam temple, his body is still there. And it's encased in some kind of resin, but it looks like he's still there. I mean, it's amazing when you see his body. You just feel like he's just there. There's no difference. So this body can also be spiritualized to that point. So ultimately, everything is the energy of the Lord. So therefore, the best use, as Prabhupada said, the best use of a bad bargain is to use it for Krishna's service. The body is a bad bargain. It's a place of misery and suffering. And then, of course, there is death. How much pleasure can you get from this body? Very little. How much pain? Unbelievable. The proportions are not the same, and they're not even close. I heard one lecture of Radhanath Swami was saying, your small little toe on your foot, how much pleasure can that give you? But if somebody steps on it or hits it with a hammer, how much pain can you get from that? It's like it'll last for weeks, you know. So this is the situation we're in. But devotees don't worry so much about these things. They just use their body in the best way. And that the thing is, the concept that helps us to become clear is to minimize the needs of the body to down to its basic requirements, and not to like try to get to maximize it to its maximus quiet. You know, like, let me get to the maximum minimum. You know what the maximum minimum is? The minimum that is maximum. You follow? I'll just stretch it until it's not maximum. It's still minimum, but in the category of minimum. It's maximum. In other words, I know I'm not this body, but still, it's very dear to me. When I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror, and I just see there's the deity that I've been worshiping all my life. And then I do the puja by bathing the deity, and smiling at the deity, taking darshan of the deity. Then I take the deity for prasad and feed it. And put the deity to rest at night and wake him up in the morning. So many things. It's the deity. It's our deity. And then I take it out on what we call not darshan, but on, not rathayatra, but to give everyone a chance to see the deity. I go out, you know. And every once in a while I look at the deity, make sure it's the dress hasn't folded. Everything is still nice like that. So that's our deity. But it's not really. The real deity is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these bodies, and another concept of the body concept of life is very important to understand, is the nationalities we come by way of this body. People are very much attached to this idea, oh, I'm Jewish, or I'm London, I'm English, or I'm American, or I'm Indian, I'm Russian. So many nationalities. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gornitai Ki Jai. These different ethnic designations sometimes put us at odds with others who have another ethnic designation. We don't like this group as much as we like this group, because they're of a different body. They're like, my body is the same as their body. Right? And people fight over that too. So this is really an extension of the original disease of I am this body. So even these extensions of what we say, gender, I'm a woman. Really? I'm a man. We play the role. Just like one of our acharyas was preaching to one lady. And he was saying, you're a soul. Yes, you're a soul. You're a spirit soul. She said, yes, I know I'm a spirit soul, but I'm a female spirit soul. Identifying with the body as the, you know, and he's a male spirit soul. So the bodily conception of life goes really deep. And the subtle aspects of that conception is not even detectable by us. But when we're put in certain situations, you know, like I'm born in a certain family and therefore I have a certain adhikari, or I have a certain history and therefore I'm better than you. Or you're better than me. I belong. See, this is all illusion, because this is just one phase in what we call our long historical sojourn in the material world. And in a previous life, we were somebody different. And in that life, that body became the most important. Now this life, this body becomes the most important. And if we somehow or other come back again, hopefully not, the next body will be the most important. So, Take care of the body. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam says one should desire a healthy life, but one should use their energy and time in order to explore into the nature of the Absolute Truth. This is the purpose of human life, and not to make a comfortable position for the body. Give it what it needs just to carry on and spend your... If you give it too much time, you waste time, and therefore there's not enough time for Krishna consciousness. Life is short. Keep it clean, keep it healthy, and, you know, do what is required in these categories, and then engage in devotional service, that's all. That's why even the Bhagavad Gita explains that one should sleep so much and eat so much. Balance, it's like the balance. Not too much is not too good, too little is not too good. Take care of Krishna's energy as the body, as a feature of your devotional service also. But not become absorbed in it. Not become absorbed in it. So, and because ultimately it has to go anyway. So whatever you do for this body is just to maintain it and not to propagate it. You can't. And so this point, of course, is a very basic point. It's the fundamental principle of all spiritual life about the nature of the body. But here in the Bhagavatam, it's given a very, what we say, lengthy explanation. And you'll find other similar verses. Why? Because this point has to be emphasized over and over. The conditioned soul, again, gravitates back to the bodily concept of life. It makes friends and enemies and makes decisions based on bodily situations. One who is on the transcendental platform doesn't see distinctions between bodies. Sees the soul within the body, and all living beings are ultimately Krishna's part and parcel. That is real vision. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, when you thus learn the truth, you'll know that all living beings are my parts and parcels in me and they're mine. So every living being is actually Krishna's part and parcel, including ourselves. And the body, every body is a variety of different combinations of material energy in order to facilitate the material desires of the soul. That's all. And when the desires are gone, then the body is no longer important, because then we transcend the body. Okay, these are some basic principles. Nothing really deep, but ultimately very fundamental to our practice in Krishna consciousness. Any questions? Yes.